Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for 6 years.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
Great mustache.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause, the mustache.
Wani, hanging out with Molly and Haw every Tuesday.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E.
Dave Wannstedt.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. He is the sayer of sooth. He is the oracle of football. Our guy Dave Wannstedt yet again.
Morning, for Dave.
Wow, I'm
going
to have to get my dictionary out and start looking up words.
Keep shooting, Rasputin. You keep picking the winners. I mean, you had the Rams. You had the Bears over the Rams.
I had.
You knew it was going to happen.
I knew it was going to happen.
You spoke it into existence, Dave.
For about, I'm going back about 3 or 4 weeks. I've been right on point. So
yeah.
But you know what? I thought it. That it would happen that way. I just believe that the game was, I talked about the crowd. I thought it was more important. I hate to say that because I don't want to slight the Rams, but the Bears were really focused on this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, you know, we talk about the weather. I kind of, was weather a little bit of a factor, but I watched Jared Goff, and I've seen enough quarterbacks over my day. He looked just like Kirk Cousins to me. He was scared to get hit in the mouth.
Yeah.
After a while, I thought that the balls were coming out of his hand a little bit quicker, you know, and maybe the cold was a factor. He's a California kid, all that crap. But I thought that he was afraid to get hit in the mouth a little bit, and that made as big a difference as anything. I mean, when you throw the ball for what would they throw for less than 5 yards a pass?
I mean,
they're not going to beat anybody, and. Great win for the Bears and Matt Nagy. You know, I was watching some tape on them last night, and the formations that they do, they really put a defense in a bind. You know, the Rams, Wade Phillips, he's seen it all, but he didn't know whether to put linebackers in there to try to defend the run. He was putting defensive backs in there, even on third down.
The Bears ran out of passing sets.
Yeah.
And they did a nice job of disguising
They were dropping. The first long run that Cohen had, I mean, the linebackers for the Rams, if you can believe this, they were dropping in pass coverage, and Mitch is handing the ball off to Cohen. And, you know, I thought the offensive line did a fantastic job. You know, we're talking defense deserves the credit, the headline, no question mm-hmm. about that. But don't slight what that offensive line did. Not just, you know, blocking Aaron Donald. Obviously, he was the focus. Run and pass. Run and pass. Even the interception that Mitch threw, there was plenty of time. The protection was great.
Yeah,
he wasn't getting hit.
His mechanics were terrible.
You know what I mean? So give that offensive line some credit. They did a nice job. And they were obviously doing a little few different schemes with pulling the center. I mean, it was an impressive game plan, I thought.
This segment with Dave Wannstedt brought to you by Webb Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Webb Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn.
Not only did you pick the winner, you told us last week that you were not concerned with the Bears' ability to stop the run. Now, against Todd Gurley, he came in as the NFL's leading rusher, and he left sore and stymied. And what did they do to stop the run against a team that really didn't try to establish it, but maybe that's because they couldn't?
Yeah, you know, I don't think they really did anything a whole lot different. You know, Vic Fangio, I mean, he's not going to be one of those guys. I remember back in the day, Belichick, you know, he would go from a 3-4 to a bear-looking defense to a 4-3-looking defense, you know, change up the scheme to try to create some stops that way from a defensive standpoint. Vic's going to line up with the same stuff, and he's going to move the guys. You know, he's going to bring a linebacker here or there. I just think that they're getting better. I just think that their defense is playing with more confidence. Akeem Smith, Smith in the middle. I mean, he's starting to make more plays. He's starting to show up more. You know, I think it's just been a confidence thing. And when that happens, it's, you know, you talk about the interception with Fuller and having confidence. That was the same thing that we talked about earlier. He is so confident that the pressure is going to get there, that these defensive backs are playing aggressively. I think you used the word downhill. They can play downhill because the quarterback's going to have to get rid of the football. And Akeem Hicks, who we just had on the show, he deserves credit for that interception, Kyle Fuller interception. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was there. I mean, he was in Jared Goff's face. He was actually hitting him. He had a hand on him, and he forced that throw. And a lot of times, pressure can be better. I have always said this, you know, because defensive linemen, it's all about the sacks. I used to tell them, guys, you know what? Pressure sometimes is better than a sack because it leads to interceptions.
Well, that if you look at Goff and you look at the picks he threw, on one, there's an offensive lineman being thrown into him, the Roquan Smith sack. You mentioned Akeem on that sack that Fuller interception that Fuller had. He was hit seven times, sacked three times, and throws four picks. I don't know that I believed he had that game in him. Yeah. Watching what they did all year long, and I get it, the weather, I get it, that he's on the road and his numbers drop, but they don't drop to 19.1 passer rating. No, that was crazy.
And I think the weather can be we use it here in Chicago because, yeah, it's going to be a big factor. It's in the minds. But really, I mean, I've been on both sides of that thing, really, you know, as far as going in and playing well in the cold weather and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think you got to give the Bears credit. You got to give their defense credit that they put that Rams offense in a position where they didn't play very good and obviously didn't make enough happen. And you know, everyone's going to talk. The best thing I thought that the Bears offense did was they came out of the game running the football. You know what I mean? If you run for 200 yards, their passing game, you know, wasn't much better. In all honesty, the passing game wasn't much better than the Rams. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you look at the numbers and completions and turnovers. But the difference was, obviously, the defense and the running game of the Bears. That showed up, you know, Jordan Howard big time.
When you watch the tape of the Bears offense and you see Mitch Trubisky sort of throw, you know, interceptions that weren't necessarily forced. They were unforced errors. The guy who looked like he was overmatched for a night. Was that rust? Was that a regression?
You know what? I think it was a little bit of both. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say – I don't want to use the word regression. I mean, that's like a panic word around mm-hmm. Chicago. You know what I mean? You don't want to say that. God, you guys will
– sound like you're speaking from experience,
you
Dave.
You guys will have your hands – I'll make your next hour or so miserable if I use that word. But I won't I think it was a little bit rusty. But also, I think that Mitch, you know, you get caught up in the moment. And don't think for a minute that – quarterbacks don't get caught up emotionally in the moment also. You know what I mean? And everybody's making plays. And think about it. Jordan Howard's ripping off runs and defense is coming up with interceptions and sacks. And you kind of get caught up in that and you want to go out and Mitch wants to make a play himself. And sometimes you can force some things rather than take the easy thing. I think that had a little bit to do with it.
So not to talk about any of the negatives in the game, because far be it from me, but there were some negatives. And one of the things when you talk about playoff teams and making a noise in the playoffs and stuff. You know, the Bears struggle a little bit on special teams. You know, we saw them lose a game to New England because of that. We saw a fake punt work against them. Now, it was close, but it worked against them. And we saw a missed field goal again. And now I know he had a nice run going.
Right.
But there are little special teams issues that have popped up here and there that make you a little concerned about that moving forward.
Well, you could. I would not. I mean, you know, that's Jim Fossil's son, I believe, is a special teams coach for the Rams. You know, yeah. He's like known. He loves doing all that special teams trickery stuff. So the Bears, I promise you, they were not really fooled as much by that because the guy has a reputation for doing it. The Rams executed it.
Was that a weird Dave risk reward? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm like, 28.
Yeah,
yeah. It worked, but boy, that was a gamble. You do that when you're sitting there with, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins, and you're feeling pretty good. You know what I mean? And I think that's what You know, and you know what you get into. You know, Matt Nagy, he runs the play on the goal line with the six offensive linemen and four defensive linemen, and so now all of a sudden the Rams got to come up. You know, you get these young guys on the, with the chalk. Who has the chalk last, I used to say. You know, let's not get into that, you know. Uh-huh. Whoever has the chalk last wins, you know, and that's – I used to use that expression with my coaches. You know, you try to make a point and they want to – whoever's standing there and gets a chance to drop the last play, it always looks the best. But, you know, I think there was a little bit of that, that, hey, we can do some bold things ourselves and overcome it.
So you're Matt Nagy, and you're looking at the last three games, and you are 9-4, and you're one game away from, you know, you win Sunday, and you clinch the division. You know, what is your mindset going in? I mean, you have to guard against complacency. In Chicago, Dave, we were talking about writing about, well, this is a team that looks Super Bowl caliber. You don't want to get ahead of yourself at the same time.
Who wrote that?
I did.
I know. Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm sitting here reading.
You don't want to get ahead of yourself.
I know. It's all part of the conversation.
I'm teasing you. Relax. You know? have some coffee. Relax. Okay.
How do you handle that from a head coaching perspective?
Well, you know what? I think this Green Bay game – you know, when the Bears were struggling as a football team, the Green Bay game, and I don't want to minimize this, because I'm not minimizing it, but I think it takes a little different life this time. Because, you know, if the team's struggling, what do you have to hang on when you play the Packers? It's a rivalry. You know what I mean? The Forrest Gregg, Mike Ditka days. You know what I mean? Or Vince Lombardi, George Halas days. I mean, that's kind of what Bear fans and the team and everybody rallies around, because you're looking for something, right? You're looking for something to
– you need to.
And that's part of this, and I'm not minimizing that. I mean, we all know the importance of that. That's not what I'm saying. But the most important thing about this game is now we're on a playoff. We're on a division march. You know what I mean? So it's Green Bay, yes. They beat us, yes. That's all – you can say bulletin board material. That's all motivational stuff that will be used this week. From the players, from the coaches, I promise you, all that stuff's going to come up. The media, it's all going to be talked about. But at the end of the day, Matt Nagy, I promise you, he's looking at this game as, hey, this is a division game, and we're trying to close the door on our division. So that, to me, is the most important thing about this game this week.
All right, we're going to bring Coach one step back for more. We're going to take a quick timeout. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Dave Wannstedt, hanging out with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. We have Coach Wannstedt with us. And, Dave, we were talking a little bit about playoff scenarios and things like that. And, obviously, the Bears can clinch the division if they beat Green Bay at home, as if there wasn't enough riding on the game and all the rest of it. The stuff the fans love, the crowd will be crazy in that game. But you also can clinch the playoffs. And one of the things you want to accomplish as soon as possible, and you don't want – listen, being in third place is fine. You'd love to be a one or two seed, but the third seed's a nice little spot to be in. You don't want Dallas catching you or anything like that. But there is a scenario in which the Bears clinch out, and then they have to go to San Francisco. And that game against Minnesota means nothing other than the fact that if Minnesota doesn't win it, and they lost last night, maybe they have to win that game in order to get in the playoffs. If you are approaching that game with a chance to eliminate a potential playoff opponent, are you more likely, if you're Matt Nagy, given you're coming from Andy Reid and all that, to say that game doesn't matter, we're not going to try to beat them, we're going to be ready and at home and healthy, or do you try to eliminate a team potentially
knock
before you have to play them?
Yeah,
you know what? I would go with my team's health.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you have to be. I mean, they've beaten Minnesota. They've beaten them at home. You know, I wouldn't as much as you want to do that. As much as you would want to do that, boy, if you had a Akeem Hicks that was banged up a little bit, or Khalil Mack, and he got hurt in
you'd
the fourth quarter of a meaningless game, I mean, you would be sick. You really would be. And so, I would go with the health of my team. And We know that we're in the playoffs. We know that we're going to be playing somebody. Let's make sure that we're at full barrels
now,
when that happens.
When Lovey was coach, they went into Green Bay and they lost that game, and then Green Bay came
2010.
Here and beat them and went on to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. You know, and that's the fear. But I think that you're right, Dave. I think when you have – when you look at this team, Matt Nagy's decision in preseason would inform that decision. I mean, the guy that rested his starters is not going to risk injury in the final game that means nothing to them, even though it means something to the Vikings. There won't be any fear of Kirk Cousins coming in here in January and beating you. You want a full, healthy team. That would be the way they would play.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for sure. I mean, and I think he demonstrated that. That's a good point. How he handled the preseason as far as the number of reps that they did, how much the veterans played. I think that he would be more focused on, hey, let's be at full strength regardless of who we play rather than go limping into a playoff game.
We were talking about it earlier. The weekend was fantastic. There were a lot of great games. There were overtime games. There was the Miami play.
Defense is back. You know what I mean? It started last week. We talked about Baltimore. But Baltimore going into Atlanta and holding Matt Ryan to 131 yards, the lowest total he ever had in his 11-year career. I mean, it's and you're seeing the Cowboys are winning. We can talk about Amari Cooper all we want for all our Dallas fans out there, but it's all about that defense and Zeke Elliott. I mean, truly. I mean, and I know Amari Cooper's making a few plays for him, but they wouldn't be in that position if it wasn't for defense and running the ball. So you're seeing that trend, I think, you know, become – and we saw it last night with Seattle.
Same thing.
Yes.
Seattle's doing the same thing.
Dave, what'd you think about Gronk being on the field for the Miami Miracle at the end?
Boy, you know what? I mean
– coaching mishap? Coaching mistake?
Oh, if Bill had to do it again over again, I'm sure he would. You know what I mean? It's – you know – because that's play. It's so easy to get caught up in that. That's the last play of the game. You know, you see the coaches on the sideline put their hand up. It's victory. It's Hail Mary. Everybody's got a word for it. And you assume that's the last play. And it's not going to get to Gronk, you know. And they put that play in for a designed deep ball so he can jump over it and slap it down. But it was too far for that to happen. We all know that. I'm sure if he could do it over again, you'd want McCourty, you know, who's their best defensive player, standing next to Bill on the sidelines. I mean, you know, common sense would say he's got to be on the field. But, that was, in the heat of the battle, I could see how something like that could happen.
What I liked about it is we have this little – it's not a disagreement, but it's a conversation about the so-called hands team. Mm-hmm. And, David, when we were watching Odell Beckham Jr., foul up and not be aggressive enough on that play, David was saying, that's the problem with the hands play. Give me a guy that's going to go after the ball. And you know, the problem is if you have a guy that goes after the ball but can't fall on the ball, now you got a bigger problem. You would think a guy with the hands of Beckham would be more likely to make a play but not a business decision. You could argue the same thing happened with Gronk. He's in that game as a hands guy for the Hail Mary. He's a giant guy. And instead, they're doing the pitcheroo, and he's out of position and doesn't know how to tackle anyone.
I've been
where
there.
Are you with that? Do you agree that the hands thing is overrated?
The hands thing works good because you never do it full speed in practice.
Yeah.
So every time you're doing it, you know, when you work on the hands thing.
You convince yourself, that's a good idea.
Well, yeah, because you see, you see Odell Beckham pick the ball up off the ground like it's a tennis ball. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And then you see the backup guy in there and he's fumbling it. And it's when you work on that play, it always looks better in practice, you know? And it's and the same thing with the Hail Mary with Gronk. I've done it both ways. I remember that we would I had some receivers that we would put back there as the Hail Mary guy to slap it down. Again, they never got any practice at that, you know. So it looks good on a chalkboard. It sounds good in a meeting. You know, the reality of it is depends on who you're. But then I've had the other situations where the safety, if he can jump a little bit and he's got some skill, I mean, he should if he's playing safety for you, right? But I've done it both ways.
I thought if he could jump a little and had some skill, he'd be playing quarterback for you.
Well, he might be. I'll tell you what. Although I've had some that couldn't jump and couldn't make plays. And they were playing for me. That's why I'm sitting here with you guys. Yeah, exactly.
Packers are coming in here definitely different than most seasons. Mike McCarthy fired. We talked about that. Aaron Rodgers, not quite sure where he is. And, you know, he's going to be 35. What's ahead for them? I mean, how important is this offseason and how odd is it to see them in December coming in here in the state they are?
Well, it's different. Obviously, it's different for a lot of reasons. You talked about it. Rodgers coming off the injury, them not really a strong, in my opinion, playoff contender. New head coach, new play caller. You know, Philbin, I guess, hadn't called plays in 10 years or whatever it was. You know, so the one ingredient that they have, and it happened last week, you knew that was going to happen. You knew Aaron Rodgers was going to come out and play good, you know, because now whether he's responsible, partly responsible, whatever his role in the Mike McCarthy firing is, he's said, I had nothing to do with it. Everybody's saying he had nothing to do with it. Well, he's going to go out and play lights out. He wants to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And so I would expect that Aaron Rodgers is going to play good this week. You know, I still don't think they're a good enough team. The Bears are a better football team playing at home. Now we got to go out and do it, obviously.
When we start talking about where the league is at right now, there are teams that have fallen apart a little bit. You know, we talk about the Saints. They got Carolina twice, and they got Pittsburgh. Both Carolina and Pittsburgh falling apart?
Unbelievable. Yeah, Pittsburgh, you know, and I said last week on my Fox NFL shows, that was a must win for Pittsburgh. I mean, a must win. You know, they had lost three in a row. I mean, they lose that one. And then Carolina playing Cleveland, and give Cleveland Baker Mayfield and company credit, but it's still Cleveland, you know, and you were talked about as a Super Bowl contender. Both these teams were. They both can get in the playoffs. Pittsburgh can win their division, but boy, they've got to turn it around.
If they don't,
turn it around
change
fast.
Looming there?
No, not at, well, I don't know in Carolina. Carolina,
well, no, okay.
You know, Carolina, I said it last week. It's beautiful. You know, I mean, think about it. You're a week ago, your quarterback throws four interceptions and you fire the defensive assistant and defensive
wow.
line coach.
That's crazy.
You know, that doesn't make any sense. And then you go out there and you don't, Cam looks off to me, whether he's hurt or not. He's not playing good. And the Steeler defense, again, when you need to make a stop, they haven't been able to do it.
Kyler Murray won the Heisman Trophy. We talked about it.
He was my guy. That's who I – he was my vote. And I thought he did the most. We talked last week. And these other guys are great players, don't get me wrong. But the Heisman's supposed to be what player had the biggest influence on their team's success. And Oklahoma's probably an 8-win team, maybe 9-win team. Without him, so he was deserving.
If Lincoln Riley comes out, he can get some player to win the Heisman.
Wow, 2 years in a row, Oklahoma winning a Heisman, isn't that something? Isn't that
if he were a guy that how did his baseball future factor into your thinking, if at all?
Boy, you know what it would. I would like to know what he's thinking. I remember where was I at the Bears? I guess
when did it affect your thinking in voting? When for
did
Heisman
when did
all?
Charlie Ward come out?
93.
Yes.
Okay. So that was my first or second year here at the Bears.
Did he play and football?
No. But let me tell you, he won the Heisman, and I called up Bobby Bowden. I'll tell you the story. I don't think I've ever talked about this. Now you bring it to mind. I called Bobby Bowden, and I said, what's he going to do? And he says, I think he's going to play basketball. I think he's not sure what he's going to do. So I called up Charlie Ward. It was like a day or two before the draft. And I said, hey, I did. And I says, hey, what are you going to do? If we draft you, will you come here? I don't want to waste a draft pick on you. And he told me that he says, if I'm a first round pick, I'll play football. Otherwise, I'm going to play basketball. And we didn't have him as a first round pick, you know. Yeah. And I think most of the people had him as a second round, third round pick. You know, he probably should have been a first round. You know, it's a little bit like Russell Wilson.
Sure.
So we backed off him, but I did have that conversation, and I think that's what you're into here. If he's going to play baseball, you know, you got to think twice. And the biggest thing about his position, guys, if he was a defensive lineman, you could get away with it. But the quarterback in today's offense, in any offense, anytime, I mean, off-season, you know, OTAs and mini camps and training camps and the extra time that the quarterback has to put in, that's all baseball season, guys. And I don't see how you can miss and be an effective quarterback. I would not. I don't think you can do it. You got to make a decision.
1993 was the year the Bears drafted Curtis Conway.
Yeah, and that was the year. Is that the year Charlie
Ward was?
Year. Yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did.
Charlie Ward was the first round draft pick of the '94 draft. So it would have been
following year.
The following year.
Yeah. So I remember having that conversation with Bobby Bowden and that, and so it was kind of the same thing. you know, God forbid, I mean, if somebody drafts this kid and gives up a first-round pick, right?
Yeah,
and then he goes and plays baseball.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get him acclimated to what you're doing.
Now you've lost that. Now you're waiting. You know, is he going to play both? I don't think it works.
No. Thank you, Dave. Great seeing you.
Okay, great seeing you.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Okay.
That is Coach Wonstadt. We'll get to Joe with a scoreboard update.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get
beat,
beat. We get beat,
beat.
Beat, beat. NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Molly and Haw, we love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Hey, how's it going, guys?
You kidding me? You know how it's going? Everyone in Chicago is on board for the big Super Bowl Express, my friend.
Have they cut the Super Bowl Shuffle video part two?
Not yet.
No, but they have coming. Club Dub. We got different videos of the Bears in their little post-victory party.
Vic and, Fangio!
Yeah, there it is. They brought Vic Fangio in, and he led the Go Bears chant at one point.
Hey, you know it's real when they bring back the Superfan skit on SNL. That'll be the next marker.
How good are they? What was your takeaway? Did you look at the Rams in that game and say, boy, that quarterback wanted no part of the weather or did getting hit in the weather, or did you say the Bears are awful good?
You picked them.
I knew that the Rams were in trouble when Todd Gurley talked about a practice they had last week in L.A. when it was a cold day in L.A. and that was going to help prepare them for the game on Sunday night. And it was 58 degrees in L.A. that day. And he said, oh, it'll be 10 or 15 degrees colder. No, Todd, it's going to be more than 30 degrees colder. And I think those guys collectively wanted nothing to do with playing out in the cold. When you're not used to it, it is jarring. And if I was Sean McVay, and I like how he took a lot of the blame for, you know, the play calls and not putting his guys in the right spots, et cetera. Here's what I would have done. I mean, they spent that whole week that they were going to be playing in Mexico City and Colorado to get acclimated to the weather, and then they, or that the elevation.
Sure.
And then they ended up going there anyway because of the issues they were dealing with the wildfires. But why not come to Chicago for the whole week and practice outside? Why not get acclimated to the weather? Because I really think there is something to that. And I think Jared Goff wanted nothing to do with it. I think Todd Gurley wanted nothing to do with it. And I think you get to a point where, you know, anytime you're really cold and uncomfortable, you just want it to end. And you stop caring about other things. You just want it to end. And I feel like that was the demeanor of the key players for most of the game. And I don't want to take anything away from the Bears, but, you know, the Rams aren't going to have to play in cold weather again this year. And they're going to be much harder to beat if you don't have them in an environment where, at some level, those players are thinking to themselves, just get me out of here.
What happens in the playoffs then, Mike? Because that game would be in L.A. And certainly, you know, Jared Goff has got to play better than he has. The last 2 weeks, he's completed fewer than 50% of his passes and averaged less than 200 yards per game. But if they play again in January out in Los Angeles, defense travels well. Could you think that that would give the Bears an edge, or would the Rams have the edge?
No, I think the Rams would have the edge at home unless they get a rainstorm like the one that we saw. And I'm really dating myself here, but it was 77-78 Vikings-Rams playoff game in the Coliseum where it rained so much and the field was so sloppy you couldn't tell who was who on the field. I mean, if you get conditions like that, if there's some freak rain event, that helps the Bears. But, you know, here's the reality. The Rams, just like the Chiefs in the AFC, when they get to single elimination, they don't have the playoff experience on either side of the ball. Andrew Whitworth is the only guy on the Rams who has any meaningful playoff experience, and it's all bad experience. It's all one-and-done playoff experience in Cincinnati. Last year, they were one-and-done. They're going to be tight, potentially. The pressure is going to be on them. The expectation is going to be on them, and I think that's what makes them vulnerable in the divisional round, whether it's the Seahawks, the Bears, the Cowboys, whoever it is that rolls in there. They're going to be vulnerable in that divisional round, and probably more vulnerable there than in the championship game because they will have won a playoff game before the NFC championship. I think that first game is when they are going to be ripe to be beaten, And I've been saying for a few weeks now that if the Seahawks end up being the team that rolls into the Coliseum in that divisional round, I think the Seahawks will beat them because the Seahawks have scored 31 points twice against the Rams this year. The Seahawks have gotten better every week. I don't think the Rams want anything to do with one of their division rivals in that division round game.
Given the way that Mitch Trubisky played, and you know, he's a good kid and he took full responsibility, are you concerned about the Bears' long-term prospects? I mean, you know, I guess we've decided as long as you don't lose a game, as long as you don't be the reason you lose the game, then it's okay if you're not the reason you win a game when you have that kind of defense. But he threw some picks there that were just dodgy.
Yeah, the ball floated a little bit. Yeah. It made me think of the Patriots-Chiefs game on Sunday night earlier this year when in the first half the ball was floating a lot on Patrick Mahomes. And I just think you need, you know, it's experience, right? And having those big moments and being in that spotlight. And you get the win and it's easier to learn from your mistakes and improve because, hey, we still got the win. I'm not carrying any scars away from this thing because I didn't cause the team to lose. So I think that the balance that the Bears have allows for a lapse on offense from time to time, a lapse on defense from time to time. So many teams are one-dimensional now that to have the balance the Bears have managed to put together, I think allows Trubisky to kind of go through his growing pains while the team is also thriving. I mean, 9-4, my goodness, who would have? I remember when were they 3-3 at one point? It was 3-3. Weren't we having this conversation like, hey, 3-3, that's great. Was it 3-3? What did they?
They lost the first one. Let's see.
There was a point where whatever the record was, it was like, oh, this is great. We'll take it if you ask in August. Mm-hmm. And now I think to be on the fringes of locking down the division, and after what happened last night to the Vikings, I think the division title was a given. It's a great turnaround. Matt Nagy's coach of the year, and Mitchell Trubisky's going to get better and better. It's just a weird spot for the Bears franchise to be in. When's the last time there was a great season plus realistic hope that it was sustainable? I mean,
they were 3-2, Mike.
It was 3-2. That's it. It feels far more sustainable now than it's felt at any time since the 85 Bears.
The segment with Mike Florio is brought to you by Webb Ford. Searching for a great deal on Fords in Chicago, visit Webb Ford in Highland, Indiana. Looking around the league, Mike, out in Oakland, the Raiders fired general manager Reggie McKenzie, despite the fact he's helped two teams make the playoffs this year. Cowboys and the Bears.
Wow.
What's next for the Raiders? Are they just looking for a guy to work with John Gruden? Does he need a general manager?
Goes to Bruce Allen.
Well, yeah, he does need a general manager because he needs someone to blame when things don't go well. Really, that's been his MO, and it's so obvious that he doesn't want to be blamed for anything that goes poorly. So when it comes to anything other than coaching, he's a puppet master. And he acts like he has no control over the puppets. And it's laughable because, you know, he said that I don't know if I'm going to be involved in the GM interviews. Well, why wouldn't you be? You are, once you get that 10-year, $100 million contract, you are the guy. And the concern for me going forward, if I'm a Raiders fan, is this. They've got all these extra first-round draft picks. And if you get lucky, and luck is a big part of it, some of these guys are going to be great players. What happens the next time you get toward the end of a rookie deal and you decide that you're going to blink in the face of Joel Siegel, which is what they did twice. They blinked with Khalil Mack when Joel Siegel, his agent, was trying to get the best possible deal. They thought Mack would play this year for $13.8 million, and they thought wrong. And then they trade Amari Cooper, and Mark Davis, the owner of the team, has admitted that one of the reasons they traded Cooper is he's got the same agent, and they saw the same thing happening next year. Well, if you have great young players, you got to pay them at some point. They don't just hang around and take less money unless they're, you know, Tom Brady and they have that weird vibe in New England where they convince guys to take less money. For the most part, guys want to get paid. So they're going to have this problem eventually if they turn these young players who become their draft picks into great players. And that's what I want to see happen. How is John Gruden going to handle future players who are due for big paydays? How will this new GM be involved in it? But I think the big picture is Gruden is always going to want to have that buffer where he can blame someone else for something that ultimately lands on his desk.
What did you make of the Steelers? And Carolina falls into that. I mean, Jacksonville earlier in the year. We're seeing teams fall apart now.
It's amazing. When you look at the Steelers losing 3 in a row, and I thought that if the Steelers hadn't already lost 2 in a row, that they were primed to step in a pothole against the Raiders, because the Raiders always play them tough. But I thought, hey, you know, they've lost two in a row. They have some tough games coming up. They have to get this win. The weird thing that happened with the Steelers, and I think we'll get some clarity today because Ben Roethlisberger does a local radio interview in Pittsburgh every Tuesday morning. Mike Tomlin meets with the media at noon Eastern every Tuesday. The explanation, I don't know if you guys saw this, played the sound, or talked about it. Tomlin talking about Ben Roethlisberger returning to the game with 5 minutes and 20 seconds left when he had a rib injury. Tomlin kind of meandered around, and it was obvious that Roethlisberger could have come back earlier. And Tomlin's excuse was, we were in the rhythm and the flow of the game, so we didn't put him back in. Well, what rhythm? What flow? They had no rhythm. They had no flow. Josh Dobbs was not good. And how do you not put your starting quarterback back on the field the minute he's ready to go? And I think there's something going on there where either Roethlisberger was embellishing or he wanted to play John Wayne and show up late and pull out the victory. But, you know, 2 weeks after Roethlisberger said, hey, I'm a captain, I've earned the right to criticize guys publicly, I think this question of why Roethlisberger wasn't back until 5 minutes remained in the game, I think that's going to get some run today. And we'll see what is said about it, because this team is dangerously close to not just losing their division lead. They're only a half game ahead of the Ravens, and the Steelers have the Patriots and Saints the next 2 weeks. The Steelers could tumble out of the playoffs altogether.
Back to the NFC North, Mike. Last night we saw the Vikings lose on Monday Night Football. Kirk Cousins now 0-7
That's
in Monday Night Football, which is remarkable. He's an $84 million investment in the offseason. Is there buyer's remorse going on in Minnesota?
They'll never admit it, but they have to at some level wonder whether or not they should have. And I said at the time, keep Case Keenum, keep Teddy Bridgewater, let Keenum continue to play as long as he's getting it done and see where Bridgewater can be, and maybe Bridgewater can still be your future. But $28 million fully guaranteed per year for 3 years. They're in $84 million deep with Kirk Cousins, so they're stuck with him for the next 2 years. And he just, look, if you watch the games, there's something missing, right? And it doesn't show up on the stat sheets. That's the disconnect between looking at the box score versus watching the game. In big spots, right, sometimes he delivers, a lot of times he doesn't. And John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator, carries a lot of this blame. I saw early in the game last night several situations where the Vikings had third and makeable, third and three, third and two. And what do? Shotgun, and they look to throw a pass. They have not, for whatever reason, committed to the run game. And I think that's created a ton of tension between Coach Mike Zimmer, who washes his hand of the offense. I think that's a mistake. I think a defensive coach especially needs to be involved in the offense. I don't, you know, if you have a great offensive coach and you trust the defensive coordinator, maybe you can pull that off, not being involved in the defense. But I think Zimmer needs to be more involved in the offense. There's a disconnect between him and DeFilippo. Something's missing with Cousins. And, you know, the Vikings now, they've got to run the table to have a realistic shot at making it to the postseason.
What about the Ravens? Watched that game and saw what happened when Lamar Jackson went down and RG3 was forced to come in for the last couple of plays. Don't know how serious that injury is, but Joe Flacco, I thought we'd seen the last of him, but maybe he's not quite dead.
Well, necessity can do a lot of crazy things in the NFL, and now John Harbaugh is keeping his cards close to the vest about who the quarterback will be this weekend against the Buccaneers. They've got a showdown against the Chargers the following week. I mean, look, Flacco is at his best when everyone has written him off. When he gets into that mindset where I'm going to go out and prove people wrong, that's how he won a Super Bowl in 2012. He felt like he was being disrespected by the Ravens with their contract offers. And then he got complacent after that. And I think now, if he gets a chance to play again, we'll see the best that Joe Flacco can do right now. Whatever it is, it's going to be at the maximum. And maybe that's the spark they need. And look, they're a half game behind the Steelers. And they are confident they can jump the Steelers and win that division. And they will be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. The Chiefs are not going to want the Ravens again. The Patriots are not going to want the Ravens again. The Ravens are the one team in the NFC that has a history, AFC rather, has a history going into New England and winning in the playoffs. So the Ravens can really screw things up if they get in. And it looks like they're getting in, and they may get in as the 4 seed.
All righty, Mike. Thanks a ton.
Thanks, Mike.
Really right, appreciate it.
That good is, stuff.
Yeah, that is always a joy to talk to Mike Florio. And Kevin, everybody is saying the Bears were 3-3. Is that accurate? Are you going to go back and check that?
I will not.
After the Patriots game.
All right.
I believe so.
Is that true?
They were 3-3.
Okay. Then Kevin.
500.
Then they Kevin won, gave they, me they false information.
Sorry, I was looking up iPad prices.
Priorities.
Shot.
It's Mully and Haw. We've got Transition next on the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.